everyone, it's Paul, and welcome to a special edition episode of Good Neighbor Pharmacy Connect. This episode is going to be a little bit different. It's actually a sit-down conversation between two AmerisourceBergen associates. I will not be part of this episode. This episode is a little bit different because it's about 340B, and the associates that you'll be meeting with are actually the people who work on our enterprise strategy for 340B every single day. So you're going to hear from Jason Atlas, the Vice President of 340B Enterprise Strategy and Solutions, Dave Hardman, who's our Director of 340B Enterprise Strategy and Solutions, and together they're going to talk about a few things, kind of the intent of 340B as a program and the history of it. They're going to talk about the advisory services, so the types of things that we do with customers like you when it comes to 340B. And then we'll talk about some of the specifics between the 340B contract pharmacy, items to think about when getting into a partnership, the cash program, some of the pitfalls. We're really going to go deep and unpack that. So I hope you enjoy this special edition episode of Good Neighbor Pharmacy Connect.
Well, thanks, Paul. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Jason Atlas.
And I'm Dave Hardman. So Jason, let's jump right in, you know, provide our listeners with a brief overview of 340B, and then we can start getting into some of the good stuff.
All right. Well, obviously the 340B drug pricing program is a U.S. federal government program that was established in 1992 that requires drug manufacturers to provide covered outpatient drugs to eligible health centers and 340B eligible hospitals at a significantly reduced price.
So when you say that manufacturers agree to charge a discounted price, does that mean that the program is ultimately funded by the pharmaceutical manufacturers?
Yeah, Dave, absolutely. And likely, people are probably asking themselves, why in the world would a manufacturer want to sell a product at a lower price than they can normally sell it at the marketplace? Well, the reason for that is at the core of the 340B program is the requirement for manufacturers that wish to have their products on formulary with state Medicaid programs is to sign a PPA or a pharmaceutical pricing agreement, which obligates the manufacturers to participate in the Medicaid drug rebate program and also sets a contractual expectation that they also agree to charge a price for these covered outpatient drugs at or below the 340B ceiling price.
Now, Jason, I thought that the patient was the one that was actually eligible for the program.
Well, actually, it's both the covered entities and the patients that are truly the beneficiaries of these manufacturer discounts that I just referenced. And covered entities really receive value from the program by being able to purchase items at the discounted 340B price. And when they bill for prescriptions at their owned or in-house pharmacies, they receive the higher non-340B rates for reimbursement by both commercial and Medicare Part D payers, and retain that spread between the 340B price and the higher reimbursement. You know, this reimbursement on insured patients enables the covered entities to service both indigent or uninsured patients who otherwise couldn't afford their medications.
Now, the covered entity, are they required to use 340B purchased drugs for their uninsured patients only?
No, the 340B drugs don't have to be dispensed to only those patient sets. You know, covered entities may choose to and often do subsidize prescription costs for their indigent population, but covered entities can utilize the retained savings or that spread I just mentioned to expand services that really benefit the entire patient population serviced by the 340B participant. Typically, they achieve this by, you know, likely hiring additional staff, expanding hours, or even opening new clinics and offering new services that they otherwise wouldn't be able to in the past. You know, covered entities and the safety net are really committed to servicing the most vulnerable patient populations and really couldn't do that without having access to 340B discounts.
So you mentioned patient subsidies. You know, how are covered entities passing that 340B savings to these patients?
Well, grantees and hospitals typically pass saving on to the patients that are obviously uninsured or meet certain qualifications through either discounted copays for either medical care, lab and radiology services, and for prescriptions at their in-house pharmacies, and in some situations, contract pharmacies.
So those 340B discounts, I think are really critical for the uninsured patients and really providing that safety net. Now, you mentioned contract pharmacies. You know, how can we maybe back up a bit and provide an overview history of contract pharmacy guidance?
Yeah, let's do a quick history of contract pharmacies. You know, contract pharmacy started as a way for entities without an in-house pharmacy to capture, you know, outpatient or ambulatory prescription savings and extend those services that they could provide to their patient population. In 1996, the Federal Register contained guidance that allowed for a single contract pharmacy per 340B covered entity. And although this worked well, most 340B participants at the time believed that if they could grow their contract pharmacy network, they could increase the savings available for reinvestment in the patient care and services without having to request funds from the government or apply for additional grant monies. If you fast forward to 2001, HRSA actually allowed covered entities to apply to participate in a demonstration project that would allow them to contract with additional contract pharmacies and collect data and determine outcomes and determine whether or not this expansion actually worked and whether the savings really were directed towards additional patients. After this evaluation in 2010, there was new Federal Register guidance that was released that now allowed for covered entities to contract with as many contract pharmacies as they wanted. Obviously, community and retail pharmacies are such a critical component of ensuring patient access to medications that this was a huge improvement for 340B participants and really allowed them to also capture this increased 340B savings through this expanded contract pharmacy network.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like retail pharmacy is a vital component of the program. You know, I assume all pharmacy types have really made the push to participate?
Well, right now the program really does include a disproportionately larger number of chain, retail, and specialty pharmacies. Obviously, the regional and national players. But, you know, many independents are participating, but their numbers are significantly lower than the chains.
Why do you think chains represent such a high portion of contract pharmacies?
Well, in my experience in working for a 340B covered entity, the easy button is obviously the contract with a retail chain where you can sign a single contract and add multiple pharmacies at the same time. While each independent requires, you know, an individual contract, potentially working with multiple 340B administrators, and typically a lot more work on my part. As a 340B participants. Not to mention, I think that independents historically haven't really understood the program, how it works, or really how to get involved. You know, as a 340B covered entity, sometimes they're hard to find and contract with. And obviously, there's been a lot of confusion around 340B. Some independents have had some really bad experiences as a result of bad contracts with 340B covered entities, insufficient vendor support, and other financial challenges of participation that they really didn't anticipate. You know, and really what this has done is forced the need to educate independent pharmacies so they better understand the program, how it's evolved since 1996, and how much easier it really is to really begin to participate today. So Dave, you know, we've covered the history of 340B and a little background on contract pharmacy. How about you explain how the program works for an independent pharmacy?
Let's start by eliminating a common misconception. You know, many pharmacists associate 340B with the cash card program for the uninsured patients. You know, while the cash card, you know, we see it as an important component of the program, third-party patients, so your Part D commercial insurance, are really going to drive that initial script volume. And for those third-party prescriptions, not much is going to change on the front end. You know, the pharmacy is going to, you know, still fill the scripts, adjudicate the claims, collect co-pays and the third-party reimbursements from the PBM. You know, third-party patients don't really know that they're filling a 340B script. And frankly, either as the pharmacist, you know, when you're really initially filling the prescription, everything's going to be done retroactively.
Dave, I think that's a great point, as most pharmacies are really surprised to learn, and nothing really has to change on the front end of filling the prescription. As in the past, most pharmacies had to maintain that separate physical inventory of 340B drug in their pharmacy and had to actually know what patients are eligible before they fill the prescription or actually grab the stock off the shelf.
Yeah, that's the benefits of working with a third-party administrator. You know, these are often referred to as TPAs, and their software automates data, inventory, ordering, and the financials. And they streamline the 340B process for both the covered entity and the pharmacies. So they perform a lot of the work behind the scenes. and specifically the collection of the switch data, which they'll usually obtain retroactively to determine which claims are in fact 340B eligible.
All right. So since I just mentioned that they no longer need to maintain a segregated inventory of 340B stock and identify the prescription as 340B eligible before they fill it, who determines that eligibility now in the world you just described?
You know, that's a great question, Jason. And really, the covered entity is working with the TPA to create rule sets and determine which claims are ultimately going to be captured in the program, usually incorporating their interpretation of what's called the 340B patient definition.
So it really sounds like these TPAs are, you know, pretty critical to the new 340B contract pharmacy partnership.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Their ability to really automate this process allows pharmacists to really concentrate on their patients. You know, while your pharmacy fills scripts, these TPAs are going to be working in the background, tracking the virtual inventory, doing the invoicing on all those claims that are 340B captured, ordering replacement stock, you know, on the bill to ship to account, and reconciling all the financials.
So, as a pharmacy owner, how much do they have to pay this 340B administrator for either startup costs or on an ongoing basis?
That's the thing right there. You know, it doesn't cost anything for pharmacies to get going. You know, the TPA fees are typically absorbed by their primary client, which is the covered entity. So if a pharmacy sets up their program correctly, there should really be minimal financial risk to participate. You know, but I guess that ultimately begs the question, you know, Jason, you come from a long line of independent pharmacy owners. You've stood behind the counters like so many of our listeners today. You know, why would a pharmacy want to participate in 340B?
Gosh, I think always a great question. And as a pharmacy owner, obviously, I'm most focused on my patients and keeping my doors open and paying my staff. And to accomplish those things, you know, obviously, I need to focus on maintaining a growing prescription and OTC business. I also need to ensure that as my customers change insurance every year, as they typically do, I have a PSAO that can support me to accept and contract with plans that make financial sense. And hopefully, obviously, maintaining or at least not seeing, you know, continued cuts to my third-party reimbursement. You know, I'm always looking to find ways to decrease operating costs as drug prices continue to, you know, escalate over time. And obviously, I need to find ways to increase margin on each and every prescription. And this is just downright difficult with PBM declining reimbursement and the ability for my customers to price check items in my store and prescription costs, you know, can easily be checked from their cell phones with so many mail order and online options. I guess I see 340B really as a way to enable me to accomplish all of those things, and especially being able to generate higher profit on 340B prescriptions through better dispense fees that I can actually negotiate as opposed to the PBM fees that I have to accept. And obviously decreasing overall costs since the prescriptions I dispense the 340B patients will ultimately be replaced and paid for by the covered entity, which drives down my operating costs. So, you know, I will say 340B does not run itself, and it's obviously extremely complicated. And I want to make sure we cover a few of the specifics in just a few minutes.
Yeah, I think those are all great reasons to participate in 340B. And at times, you know, some of those are overlooked benefits of being a contract pharmacy. So really, to sum it up, the pharmacy doesn't change their front-end process. There are no costs to join.
Nope.
The TPA software, you know, handles data, compliance, ordering.
Yes, but it still needs to be monitored.
And then the pharmacy can increase their margin?
If you have the right contract, absolutely.
So what am I missing?
Well, I alluded to some of the complexities a few minutes ago, which, you know, are some of the key issues that have really been the reason for pharmacies to leave the program over time. You know, and some of those issues that I think are important to be aware of are inventory swell from 340B replenishment that can result in way too much inventory on the shelves of the pharmacy and not enough cash in the bank. Sometimes there are cash flow issues that weren't understood as a result of outgoing cash to pay the covered entity for eligible 340B claims where the pharmacy hasn't received replenishment inventory, so they're floating cash. You know, finally, I guess the overall inability to understand whether the economics truly make sense for the pharmacy. But I think before we address those issues, why don't you explain the typical time frame from initial conversation with the 340B administrator or covered entity to ultimate registration eligibility for the pharmacy.
Yeah, you know, I think it's good to really set the right expectations, as you know, eligibility isn't going to happen immediately. So it's good to really understand that timeline. So contract pharmacy registration happens 4 times annually. There are 15-day windows at the beginning of each calendar quarter in which a covered entity can register a contract pharmacy as long as there is a fully executed agreement in place. And then from there, eligibility would start the first day of the subsequent quarter. So you're looking at about 75 to 90 days of wait period just from registration and eligibility. But you know, before that, you got to keep in mind that there's an engagement process with the covered entity that can take, you know, anywhere between 30 to 90 days prior to registration. So be sure to really include that into your timeline and set the right expectations. So ultimately, you'll know when you start seeing those 340B benefits.
All right, Dave, you mentioned this 30 to 90 day engagement period with a covered entity prior to the registration. What should the pharmacy owners be focused on during this window in order to make sure they include the right things in their contract?
Yeah, that's a great question. And most contract pharmacy agreements are going to be pretty similar, apart from three crucial components. You have your billing, the claims, and the third-party reimbursement models. Now, your program may look different than your friends down the street, or even if you have another partnership with a different TPA and covered entity. You know, regardless, you need to understand your configuration on these three specific models and ultimately which impacts you'll have on your retail business.
So I'm assuming the impacts you're referencing are probably inventory swell, cash flow. You know, I'm really understanding and negotiating the right dispensing fees. Are there ways to preemptively address these issues?
Yeah, the impacts are definitely manageable. As long as the pharmacy has a plan in place, you know, keep in mind these operational models and their availability is going to be dependent on the TPA's capabilities.
So really that big of a difference between these different 340B administrators?
Yeah, you know, working for three different TPAs, you know, spending over 9 years in that space, I can attest that each TPA is going to work a little differently. You know, unfortunately for the pharmacy, the covered entity is the one that is going to make the decision on the TPA. You know, we've seen some circumstances where a covered entity and a pharmacy will collaborate and make a joint decision. But either way, you know, the pharmacy needs to make sure that they're fully vetting the TPA.
Great. Why don't you dig in a little bit more and explain that first component, the billing models and the different options available to our indies?
Sure. And you know, this is kind of the first part of that vetting process, really starting with the billing model. And the billing model determines when a pharmacy is going to be invoiced for the 340B dispensations. You know, the first adopted model was what's called the billing at transaction, in which the TPA is going to invoice the pharmacy for each individual prescription, regardless if it meets a replenishable package size. So what this does is it creates a drug or an inventory liability for the pharmacy. So as payments are often made before any replenishment stock is delivered back to the pharmacy. You know, for example, you're looking at a 30-pill prescription out of a 90-pill stock bottle, the pharmacy is invoiced after that prescription. You know, while a pharmacy, you know, you'll retain your dispense fee, the outstanding inventory can have an impact on cash flow. You know, the pharmacy is ultimately fronting money for the covered entity's 340B program, which makes this model definitely covered entity centric.
All right. So please tell me there's a model that reduces that cash flow impact and really is a little more pharmacy centric.
For a long time, there wasn't, you know, until an outpouring of pharmacies really expressed their displeasure with cash flow concerns. You know, ultimately, billing at replenishment was developed. And in this model, the TPA will invoice the pharmacy after a full package size is met. Usually it's for all the prescriptions that make up the accumulations of the full package size. So unlike the previous model in the billing at transaction, the pharmacy retains all money until the replacement stock is ordered. So really this subtle change aligns both the pharmacy payment with replenished inventory.
So why is that payment alignment and inventory replenishment so important?
Billing at transaction is really one of those components that can turn a 340B program sideways for a pharmacy. You know, a lot of pharmacies experience 340B related cash flow issues. You know, that's the number one concern we typically hear from pharmacies today. And this model creates a liability for the pharmacy until that full package size is met and ultimately replaced. So while, you know, utilizing a billing at replenishment, you know, this is going to align the outgoing payment with the replacement inventory. So ultimately, we provide an in-depth example in our ThoughtSpot presentation. I really want to kind of point that out. And I encourage pharmacies to reach out to us to review that material. And if you need any access, we can definitely provide that of our recorded session.
Yeah, that's really a great call out. You know, and now that you defined and compared the billing models, let's move on to the next part of the claims model options and if there are similar impacts to the pharmacy cash flow.
Yeah, sure. You know, the answer I think is really no. I don't believe the claims model, you know, has the same impact as the billing model. But I think it ultimately amplifies the billing model decision, you know, because the more prescriptions that are 340B eligible, the more cash you are paying out prior to replenishment, it creates that greater drug liability we were discussing. So real quick, you know, let's explain the claims model. So that determines ultimately which claims are going to be captured into the 340B program. And today we're seeing three common approaches. First, you have the all claims model, which includes really the most volume of 340B captured claims compared to the other two models. Both brand and generic drugs are included, and there would not be a use of a financial filter in this model.
All right, hold on right there. Can you define what that financial filter model is and how that impacts the pharmacies?
Yeah, this is common. The financial filter, it's, you know, also referred to as a profitability check, is really put in place to prevent loss for the covered entity. You know, individual prescriptions are calculated using copay, third-party reimbursement, and then subtracting out the 340B cost of goods and dispense fees to ensure profitability for the covered entity. You know, the fact that the all claims model doesn't use a financial filter is really why it has the highest volume of captured prescriptions compared to the next two models. The winners only model, which only captures brand and generics that pass that profitability check. And really to kind of give you a perspective, this financial filter will remove 70% of eligible prescriptions when you compare that to the all claims model. And then the last model, which is a brand only. And as I'm sure you probably guess here, it's only brand drugs that pass the profitability check are captured into the program. You know, the removal of generics really leads this model to having the lowest volume of 340B captured claims. And I'd say roughly 90% of prescriptions are removed when you compare this to the all claims model.
So knowing all this, you know, what should our pharmacies know to make a better decision?
The claims model, I think, is going to impact total volume of prescriptions. So I think first, you really need to review your billing model and understand those impacts to better understand the impact on inventory and the cash flow between the all claims, winners, and brand-only models.
Do you feel that one model is better than the other for our pharmacy owners?
I think that's really going to depend on a pharmacy's 340B goals. You know, whether they want to shift the most retail spend to 340B replenishments, maximize value and savings for both the covered entity and the pharmacy, or really limit the total script of volume and inventory complexities. You know, any of these options can really make a pharmacy successful as long as it incorporates the right third-party reimbursement model and dispense fee.
All right, Dave, you mentioned that right third-party reimbursement model and negotiated dispense fee. Probably this is maybe the first consideration for a pharmacy owner and whether they'll actually participate and whether they can make money and additional profit. Can you run through the dispense fee options and how the pharmacy gets paid?
Sure, yeah. And I think it's best really to focus on three common approaches that are utilized today. You know, whether it's an independent or a chain, this is really what we're seeing in the marketplace. You have your flat fee model, which was really the only option for a period of time. And in this model, a flat fee is applied to every 340B claim that is captured in the program. The issue, your pharmacy economics are continually evolving, and usually a flat dispense fee won't address those changes. You know, today, flat fees are most often used in an all claims model And we've even seen different flat fees applied for brands, generic, specialty, and cash prescriptions, really in an effort to combat some of those changing economics. But it's worth mentioning here that, you know, if your pharmacy has an older contract that still includes a flat fee with a financial filter, you may want to scrutinize that financial impact. There was ultimately limitations on the flat fee that was led to the inclusion of a percentage-based dispense fees. Percentage fees were really created for use with a financial filter to make sure that the pharmacy is adequately compensated for those high-margin retail claims. And the first of those models is, you know, what's kind of referred to as just a straight percentage. So in this percentage can be applied either to the total claim revenue, which is your copay plus the third party reimbursement, or in what's called like the net savings, so your total claim revenue minus your 340B cost of goods. And then the last model, which is going to incorporate kind of aspects of both, is the flat plus percentage, in which usually the percentage is going to be applied to just that total claim revenue, the third-party reimbursement and copay. So, you know, to provide a little perspective, the flat fees and percentage in this model are typically going to be lower than what you would be offered in either just a straight percentage model or a straight flat fee. You know, while you know, the list and these models aren't exhaustive, these tend to be the most popular approaches that are adopted today by covered entities.
Dave, are you really still seeing a lot of our pharmacies on flat dispense fee models incorporating that financial filter?
Yeah, while they may happen, I think they're pretty rare today. You know, when we do see them, those flat fees are significantly below market rates, causing a lot of strain, I think, on the independent financials, and that's really what they're communicating to us. So that's why we encourage pharmacies to review those agreements annually. You know, really ensure that those fees are in line with your retail business, and if not, have that discussion with your 340B partners.
Is it pretty easy for our pharmacies to renegotiate their dispense fees with the covered entities?
I wouldn't say easy, but it definitely isn't impossible. You know, 340B, you know, we look at it as a collaboration, you know, between both the covered entity and your TPA partners. So if the economics have changed over the years, approach your partners, you know, hopefully have some supporting data with you and have that honest conversation with them. You know, this approach typically leads to great results.
That's really good to hear. And I think, you know, my next question, I guess more importantly, since you covered how different the options are, you know, can the pharmacy that's on a billing at transaction model request a change to billing on replenishment?
Yeah, but you may be limited by a TPA's capabilities. You know, most TPAs have really transitioned over to that billing on replenishment, but only for their newly contracted pharmacies. You know, this isn't to say that they wouldn't offer a current pharmacy the option to switch, but they need to be made aware that you're having issues with the billing at transaction. You know, a change in billing models could introduce some complexities, both for the TPA and the covered entity. So really be sure to work with your partners and really understand their capabilities, your billing options, and the impact to any change.
So, you know, now that you've covered these contractual components and the relationship with the covered entities and the pharmacy, including primarily the handling of insured patients, you know, how does this apply to cash paying customers or uninsured patients I referenced earlier? I mean, is it really necessary for the pharmacy to provide a 340B cash discount program?
That is a great question. And we highly encourage our independent pharmacies to participate in a cash card program when offered. You know, we see this as a vital component and to truly partner with your covered entity. You know, the cash card is going to drive the mission of the program. It enables pharmacies to really obtain a dispense fee and replenishment drug, but it allows the patients to adhere to their drug therapy by extending those discounts that they really otherwise wouldn't have access to outside of 340B.
Yeah, obviously another attribute is if your independent pharmacy accepts or participates in that cash card program, there may be some of the retail chains that don't. So this could enable the pharmacy to capture additional 340B patient prescriptions based upon your ability to service those uninsured patients.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think spot on. You know, being on a short list of pharmacies that accepts a cash card means more visibility and foot traffic for your pharmacy.
All right. So how does this cash card work? Is it like an insurance card? And ultimately, who pays the pharmacy?
Yeah, typically, the covered entity is going to be responsible for identifying the eligible patients, distributing the card, and informing which pharmacies will supply the discount. Now, the card itself is really going to have the look and feel of a traditional insurance card. You know, it's going to include BIN, PCN, group, and the pharmacy is going to adjudicate the claim just like they do with a third-party prescription. The patient's going to be responsible for the copay, and that can really range from, you know, $0 if in which the covered entity is going to subsidize the full cost of the drug and the pharmacy dispense fee, to maybe like a flat fee based on a sliding fee schedule, which incorporates, you know, patient's poverty level and the drug copayment tier, all the way up to what would be considered like a full price, which includes the 340B cost of the drug and the pharmacy dispense fee. You know, in either of those scenarios, the patient has access to a significant discount when you compare that to what they would have in just a traditional retail setting. It's really worth noting here, though, that if a covered entity is going to subsidize any portion of that copay, that they are going to be responsible for making the pharmacy whole in that transaction. Also, all these cash card dispensations are still going to be eligible for that inventory replenishment. And lastly, the setup's going to be vary a little bit based on TPA, the covered entity, and the patient population. So, you know, Jason, we've covered the insured and the uninsured. How about we shift our focus to that patient population we haven't covered yet? You're our Medicaid expert. You spend a lot of time with our customers, our pharmacies, working through various Medicaid issues. Can you give an overview of Medicaid and specifically as it relates to 340B?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's break this down into two distinct Medicaid prescription benefit types that we're all familiar with. Medicaid fee-for-service and Medicaid managed care that are typically handled very differently. Medicaid fee-for-service almost exclusively is excluded at contract pharmacies and is defined within the state Medicaid billing and reimbursement notices. There are a few exceptions where the pharmacy, the covered entity in the state could partner for fee-for-service inclusion, but really, you know, most states won't allow this. And, you know, the complications for the pharmacy and billing of 340B claims the fee-for-service is just way too cumbersome. And really, the primary reason for this is the duplicate discount prevention. Usually, the states will utilize the dispensing pharmacy's MPI number for excluding claims from rebate collection. And with retail pharmacies, it's really difficult due to the fact that the pharmacy is filling both 340B and non-340B eligible claims. In the event that they did want to somehow include 340B claims at a contract pharmacy, it would require typically two MPI numbers, one that would be used for billing 340B claims and one that would be used for non-340B claims. So the state ultimately would know which prescription claims they would submit for rebate collection with the manufacturers. You know, ultimately, it's really complicated. And if any listeners today have questions, reach out to us. You know, I'm happy to field those questions. And then the second part is managed care. And the answer to that is it really depends on whether or not the covered entity wants to include these capabilities with their third-party administrator. And ultimately, if your contract includes Medicaid managed care, you really need to know what you're doing.
Now, you have a unique history and really some perspectives from your time at Apexis, at a 340B health system, and an independent pharmacy. You know, how would you navigate the inclusion of managed Medicaid claims into your 340B program?
Well, first, I need to know the provider billing manual requirements. Each PBM manual may have different requirements for identification of 340B claims. Many plans actually require the pharmacy to identify 340B claims by adding a NCPDP claim modifier or submission clarification code that flags that prescription as using 340B purchased drugs so that those prescriptions can be excluded from rebate collection. So ultimately, you know, if your pharmacy is including these MCO claims as 340B eligible, you need to first know which claims have been qualified by going in and accessing your 340B administrator reports or invoices. And then potentially you have to go back in your pharmacy system, reverse those claims, and resubmit with the submission clarification codes. I can say there's a big risk. I mean, if you're on bill on replenishment, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, and you had four prescriptions, each having 30 pills in the bottle, in order to reach that 100 count bottle, you need to go back and sequentially reverse four claims over potentially a 4 month period, add in the submission clarification codes, and then re-adjudicate the claims. You're probably seeing that, you know, this could be an issue if the patient's insurance has changed, that they term from the plan, or now if their plan formulary changed and you may get a reject if you need a prior authorization. You know, there is a lot of risk, and I've seen pharmacies audited and had huge reimbursement clawbacks if they didn't follow the billing requirements set forth in that billing manual I'd mentioned, or they could even see lower reimbursement for 340B claims once they're re-adjudicated. You know, and if that's the case, you obviously need to make sure that the updated claim with the lower reimbursement is captured by the 340B administrator. Otherwise, you may have lost, you know, a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of some of the industry knowledge available to our AmerisourceBergen customers. You know, these are the type of conversations we're having with our pharmacies. It's really part of our 340B advisory services. You know, we help pharmacies navigate the complexities of the 340B program, have over 25 years of 340B experience between the both of us, and a lot of knowledge, expertise, and I think more importantly, relationships across the industry. You know, whether it's manufacturers, covered entities, or TPAs, those third-party administrators.
You know, why don't you describe briefly the types of things we're doing to help our customers that are new to 340B or just want to know more about it?
Yeah, pharmacies often reach out to us knowing that there's value in a 340B partnership, but really don't know where to get started. You know, first and foremost, we educate and we want to provide valuable resources. You know, we urge pharmacies not to bypass this critical step. And from there, you know, we'll strategize reviewing current claims volume, you know, maybe identifying some potential covered entity partners and determine how to approach them, you know, whether that's directly to the covered entity or maybe through a TPA. You know, we want to coach our pharmacies really on a plan of engagement.
So Dave, how would that conversation go with a pharmacy that was recently approached by a 340B administrator or covered entity?
For those pharmacies, you know, that initial detective work is really unnecessary. So we'd really shift our focus to data, you know, determine the current claims volume, utilizing NPI matching from a provider panel supplied by the covered entity, incorporating our analytics tool to really review those financial projections, and then provide guidance, you know, on contract pharmacy terms and dispense fees. You know, really what we want to do is we want to provide that extra set of eyes to make sure nothing goes overlooked.
Well, what about those that have been in the program for a while and they're trying to navigate existing contracts or wanting to determine if their negotiated dispense fees are in line with the market rates, you know, or ultimately if they're actually making any money at this point?
Yeah, these are what we refer to as our 340B veterans. They've spent the time in the 340B trenches and really have the scars to prove it. So 340B is continually changing, and your program should definitely be changing with it. So really where we start, we ask them is, when was the last time you reviewed your 340B agreement? You know, really, truly dissect your billing models, the claims models, third-party reimbursement models to ensure that they're meeting your objectives today. Also use and incorporate data with our analytics tool to provide some financial perspective, reviewing dispense fees, you know, evaluating market rates, and then ultimately advise if we see any areas of improvement.
Dave, that's great. And I think before we wrap up today's podcast, what are we doing proactively to engage our pharmacies about 340B contract pharmacy opportunities?
Yeah, while the 340B advisory services, which we just discussed, are a little bit more reactive in nature, our Pharmacy Connect program takes a different approach. You know, we leverage preferred TPA partners and their clients to proactively identify viable pharmacies for 340B partnerships. You know, we use data with our analytics tool to evaluate both claims volume and financials, really in an effort to grow 340B participation across our network. We then present data to the pharmacies, you know, have a discussion, potentially provide some introductions to our TPA partners, and then offer additional support as needed. You know, whether it's Pharmacy Connect or the 340B advisory services, we're really here to support our pharmacies on their 340B journey.
Dave, I know we could probably talk for another 45 minutes, and I've really enjoyed chatting about the 340B resources available for our pharmacy customers and learn more and get involved. And obviously, as a reminder, you know, for those listening, if you have questions, you can reach out to our 340B advisory services team at 340B@AmerisourceBergen.com. And also let us know if any feedback on the podcast and what you'd like to hear about more in the future. Once again, I'm Jason Atlas, joined by Dave Hardman. And thanks for tuning in today. And back over to you, Paul.
This has been another episode of Good Neighbor Pharmacy Connect. I hope that you enjoyed it. Listening to Jason, listening to Dave talk about some of the nuances within this 340B program, you can tell it's complex, but please make sure that you reach out to them. Please make sure you connect with your team. If this is something that you're interested in, our AmerisourceBergen team is here to help you. And as always, if you liked this episode of Good Neighbor Pharmacy Connect, please like, subscribe, comment, rate, or go back and listen to some of our other episodes. We have a bunch of stuff coming to you in the new year, and we're really, really excited about 2021. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.